Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth Yost-Hammer, and I'm the director for the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana here in New Orleans. And I am delighted to finally have this episode today with Dr. Stephen Chu. Dr. Chu is a professor at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. He's been a professor of psychology at Samford since 1993. He served as department chair for several years, and he's trained as a cognitive psychologist. He's nationally recognized as an expert on the cognitive basis of effective teaching and student learning. He conducts original research on topics such as using examples in teaching, the impact of cognitive load on learning, the importance of student curiosity and trust in teachers, and the tenacious misconceptions that students bring into the classroom. He also works to translate cognitive research into accessible knowledge for teachers and students, and he has a groundbreaking series of YouTube videos for students on how to study effectively that I've used for years. Steve and I have been colleagues and friends in the psychology teaching world for a long time, and so welcome so much. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure, Liz. Always great to talk with you.
And we will just say we had trouble doing this. We're two busy people.
That's right.
We've been trying to do this for months. But most recently, I should say I have learned so much from all your work that I've seen over the years. But most recently, I read this article from the teaching professor that you wrote that is about student trust. And I was so just compelled by this topic. And so that's what I want to focus on today. So I thought we could just start with this question. Is it more important for students to trust us or like us?
That's a great question. And I think both are important, but when it comes right down to it, trust is really the key ingredient, because if students like us, they'll talk to us, they'll feel like we're approachable. But if they don't trust us, then they're not going to really engage deeply in the course and put forward the effort. So I think trust is really critical, and amazingly enough, it's not something that's gotten a lot of research attention until more recently, and it's not something that a lot of teachers have thought about, the importance of establishing that student trust in you as the teacher.
Yeah, I thought that was really Yeah, interesting when you mentioned that it hasn't gotten a lot of research. Research in the teaching and learning world. I know from I'm a social psychologist, and I know it's gotten a lot of work there interpersonally, but not to have been applied yet. Can I just ask, how did you stumble across that as this is something I want to do?
Well, you're right. There's a ton of work on organizational behavior and social interaction and things, it's something that I've been sort of, it's a concept I've kind of thought about for years, but I didn't really understand that it was trust. And it was just this observation I had that some of the best, most respected teachers out there aren't necessarily approachable or necessarily likable. There's a lot of examples of a professor who's very imperious and cantankerous, and you almost kind of fear them in a sense, but you also recognize that they are great teachers. And it's kind of a paradox, because we think of great teachers, we didn't think of like very benevolent mentors and things like that, but there are great teachers who aren't necessarily the people you'd hang out with, you know, after class is over to go out and get a coffee with or something like that. And so it's actually something I've thought about for years, because some of my favorite teachers were kind of cantankerous people. And it's like, why is it that they're such effective teachers? And it's because we trust them, that we know they're dedicated to helping us to learn, and they know their subject, and they're very competent in how they teach. And so we trust them, and that's how they really that's how they are, become really effective teachers. On the other hand, there are faculty that I know who are very, approachable and very passionate, but aren't necessarily the teachers that students really feel like they learn the best from. So I was trying to resolve that, and trust is kind of the answer. You've got to trust that this teacher is competent, and is going to help you.
Yeah, I loved your in the article, and we will put a link in this podcast episode. We'll put a link to the article. I liked you starting with the examples of the Hogwarts professors, right? Being,
Right.
trustworthy and competent, but maybe not always approachable.
Yeah, so I had Professor McGonagall there as the example, but and I didn't put this in the article, but the opposite is Gilderoy Lockhart, who, for not to get into in the Harry Potter trivia here, but someone who's very outgoing, and you can talk with anybody, but you don't trust them as a professor, because you don't feel like he's really dedicated to helping students learn. So they're both kind of examples there, but I only put the Professor McGonagall in there as an example.
Yeah, that's a great one. I wonder, you've mentioned competence. I wonder if you could just unpack a little bit those three components that you see, as being part of trust. Like, tell us like what each of these mean in terms of trust, competence, integrity, and then being beneficial to student learning.
Yeah, competence involves both knowledge and teaching skills. So the student has to believe that you can, like, conduct a really good course, that you're organized, that you are on top of things, that you have the sufficient disciplinary knowledge, and you know how to present it in a way that the students can can learn from, they can follow. So it's teaching skill, and it's knowledge of the subject that you're supposed to be teaching. It's both those things. So that's the competence. If if they see that you're knowledgeable, but you don't you're not you're very disorganized, then you're not going to be seen as particularly competent. Then integrity is where you keep your promises, you don't play favorites. It's not treating everyone exactly the same. It's treating everyone as a person who has, like, a life outside of the classroom, and is deserving of dignity, and so it's treating everyone with respect, and like I said, keeping your setting a policy that's seen as being fair, and enforcing it fairly. And then beneficence, the last one, is where the students see you as a partner in learning, that you're not an obstacle to them, passing the course and checking off that box, but actually, if they put in the effort, they know that you will help them, and to succeed. So you are kind of helping them to succeed, and so that's the beneficence part of it.
Thank you. Thanks for that. You mentioned j just then something a question I really wanted to ask you about. You mentioned when you're talking about integrity, being truthful, being fair, not necessarily treating everybody the same because everybody's coming in like with different things, but treating everybody with respect and fairness. And that leads into like one of the recommendations you make about what we can do to build trust is showing flexibility in assignments and deadlines to let students do their best work. And I think that ties into integrity, right? I see you as a person, and so I'm going to have flexibility with you and do this. Okay, I think I did a little bit of a backup here. When I talked to people on my campus about this article, I was so excited about it. One question that came up is how do you do that and be fair? How do you treat everybody not the same, but with respect and be fair? How do you show flexibility in assignments and deadlines to let students do their best work, but also be fair? How does
Yeah,
fairness come in it for you?
it is a tough question, and people have solved it in different ways. So some professors will give, like, one late pass, so they'll allow a student to use to get out of jail free card so they can turn in something late. So that way everyone starts with the same, sort of free pass kind of card. There are times where, I set a deadline and it's kind of clear that the class is struggling with that. And so if I can, then I can just push it back. And the bottom line to me is always like, I want to see their best work. And so if a student is sick or if they have something going on in their life and I'm not going to get their best work, then I want to, give them enough leeway so I can get their best work, because that's what I want to judge. So sometimes as a class, I'll just say if everyone's really struggling with it, then I'll move it back a couple of days. If I can't, though, I mean, I explain to them, look, we're up against the deadline. If I back this up, then it's going to be even worse. So just, do the best you can. And so at the very least, that's treating them like a person with dignity. It's like, I'm just like, no, I'm not going to do that. You're going to explain the reasoning to them as to why you can or can't do that kind of thing. So, it even when you turn someone down, you say, I've considered it, I've heard you, and this is why I can't do it. And so hopefully, even if they, the answer is no, they'll see that it's not because it's because, you just are sort of patronizing them, or you're making this kind of authoritarian decision. You've really thought about it. So yeah, and can students kind of take advantage of that? Yes, they can. And I guess, I've taught long enough now that it's like, I just think if they're just kind of asking for extra time, a lot of times it doesn't actually really help them, because then they'll just find another reason not to, to procrastinate on the assignment or something along those lines. And that's part of, their growing up they get the deadline, they still don't do well, then that's something that's an experience that I hope they'll learn from. But yeah, it's, sometimes students will take advantage of that, but I guess I'd rather err on that side than penalizing someone for something that's, been a they're going through a really tough time. And coming out of COVID, this has been especially a problem. I mean, I just the other day, just a couple of days ago, I had a student in one of my classes just tearfully came and say, like, I've been going through some really tough, things, family and things like that. And so she had missed a number of assignments. And so I just said, get them in, and you may not get full credit for it, but I'll work with you on this, and show me that you can do this, and we'll work something out with you. And playing favorites is like, I would only do this for you, but what I say is like, I'll do this for anybody who's like facing a really tough life situation. And so I think that's fair, but it's treating everyone within their own life situation.
And one thing I hear when you're saying that is a transparency, right? Being transparent about it. I am of the I these are the deadlines. This is why they're in place. Explaining the rationale. If something comes up, then come talk to me. And saying that to the class, come talk to me. And then being transparent about it. I think that goes a long way, transparency.
Absolutely.
One thing that I have, and it is funny how some of this flexibility it really has come about it since COVID, right? We realize I think it pushed those of us in higher ed to recognize the importance of it. And then maybe then once we felt it, we're like, oh, okay, the world doesn't end if you give an extension to one student, And so, but one thing that I have done is I have, and this is in my research methods class, I have a grace period that anybody can use 24 hours, no questions asked. No questions asked, but you have to in advance, because I think that's building metacognitive skills and other kind of skills, right? You have to in advance just say, it can be 1 minute in advance of the deadline, but advance the deadline, grace period. That's all you have to say to me. And then I say, if it needs to be longer than 24 hours, just come talk to me and let's, see what we can do. And I'm telling you, since I've implemented this, I think I've had one person do it one time in research methods, like only once, maybe twice. You know, it's just like it's not like this influx of students taking advantage of me. It's been
And
interesting.
yeah, and I think that's yeah, that's a great example of how to kind of build that flexibility in. But there have certainly been times, I mean, I don't know the pulse of all the things going on campus and other courses, and so I'm at a very small school, and like it's there can be like another major paper due in one class that's just affecting a lot of the class. And you know, so I am, you know, open. I mean, part of that trust, and actually that also approachability is where they're willing to say to me, you know, like we're really kind of trying to get this, you know, research project which they've never done before, and they're just kind of trying to put it together. And it's like, you know, okay, you know, I've got a little extra time on here, and once again, it allows them to do their best work on both projects, the best learning experience in both projects. Then, you know, why not just give them that extra leeway?
Do you have, and I'm not asking you to talk about your colleagues, but like, you know, when you speak to a national audience and work with, you know, and I know you work with, you know, people beyond your school, do you get faculty members that push back to that kind of philosophy as handholding or coddling, or do you get pushback on that? And if
I
so,
think
how
so.
do you respond?
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of what you said. It's like they're kind of fearful that I, you know, I am not going, it will undermine my authority if I do so. And as you pointed out, like after COVID, we were, you know, or during COVID, we were like being more flexible on these deadlines, and the world didn't end, and the students actually, you know, responded well, and they really want to give their best effort. If they trust you. And so, you know, I have, you know, it's interesting. I gave the article, I run a discussion group with STEM faculty at my institution, and they just really found the article very interesting, and because in part because they realized that students are coming in very distrustful of STEM courses if they've had bad experiences with it, and they're just thinking, you know, yeah, some transparency, some flexibility, that might go a long way towards getting students to actually engage in the course rather than like, you know, tell me what I need to do to pass and get out of this course so I'll never have to think about it again. So you know, you do get some pushback, but I think there's things you can do to kind of promote trust, and you sort of take small steps rather than just jumping right into the, oh, you should do this 24-hour grace period thing. It's like, oh, you should just start just being a little more flexible, you know, and maybe, you know, try sometimes like people will do like there's an early deadline and a late deadline. So early deadline, you get some extra credit. Late deadline is the deadline, and the things along those lines. There's, you know, I hate to say baby steps, but that's kind of it to give it a try. Yeah, I think there, you know, I'm not just saying don't, you know, jump in, you know, the deep end here, but there are things you can try and just, you know, see if it makes a difference. And especially in courses that are seen as being very challenging, like a lot of STEM courses. Or statistics or research methods, that trust goes a long way. I mean, I mean, students will really look for the professor who they feel is going to be the strongest advocate for their learning. So the more the students feel vulnerable, the more they feel like they're taking a risk, then that's when their trust is going to be even more important.
Even more important, I'm glad you pointed that out. So for listeners who are teaching, you mentioned the article, those like historically known to be hard kind of courses that are required for your major. In psychology, it tends to be statistics and research methods, and chemistry, it's organic chemistry. And yeah, you know, we know these kind of courses. And so, yeah, even more important. And you can totally see that. Can totally see that. I guess we'll have time for about one more question here. We've mentioned ways of building trust, like we've mentioned the flexibility, transparency. You've got other really good ones listed in the article, like acknowledging student anxieties, Yeah, and you know, that's a baby step, right? Just acknowledging you are coming into this biology class and this might be scary to you. You know, promoting belongingness, establishing norms of dignity and respect, providing frequent formative feedback. Oh, yes. Okay, so you mentioned these. I wonder if you wanted to like just highlight maybe one or two of the things you think most faculty should try to avoid if you don't want to undermine your trust.
I actually did students of mine did a research project on this where and we try to think of a betrayal that would be pretty significant. So we set up this hypothetical situation where a professor has the policy of dropping the lowest grade, and then the gives the exam, and then the professor says, this is all hypothetical, he or she is so disappointed that they're not going to in the performance that they're not going to allow them to drop that grade. You know, so it's a change in policy, which the professor can do. I mean, it is perfectly permissible for the professor to change grading parameters. But you know, we wanted to see what would happen, and of course, trust just plummeted. But so did, like, you know, the teaching evaluation, and just and it dropped like a rock. It was, you know, you talk about significant. It was just, you know, and because just something like that, where because it's a violation of both integrity, you didn't keep your word, and beneficence, where it's like, I'm not going to allow you to, you know, have a chance to recover from this bad performance. And it's also competence, because it's like, well, maybe it's because you didn't teach us or prepare us properly, you know, for the exam. So yeah, you know, that kind of betrayal is really significant, is really has a huge negative impact. And I think, you know, things, and so I really would like to do more research on the things that are going to undermine trust. But I think, you know, changing a policy or being too strict in keeping a policy in the light of what the students see is perfectly reasonable, you know, a situation where, like, you go remote all of a sudden, and it's like, oh no, I'm not going to make any changes the way my you know, the grading policy or due dates, even though we're all scrambling to try and redefine our lives, you know, in isolation. But there's things like, you know, playing favorites. That's, you know, that's the way. And I've done that accidentally before, where and I wouldn't say I agreed with it, but I saw afterwards, like, some of the students in the evaluation said, oh, he really, you know, called on these same people, you know, over and over again, or favored these people. And so I learned to be really careful about that. But playing favorites undermines trust, and especially, you know, doing like racial stereotyping, and violating the psychological safety, like calling someone out or humiliating or embarrassing a student. And you know, I'm pretty sure, I haven't tested this, but you know, humiliating or embarrassing one student probably lowers your trust for the whole class, because they just think, you know, if he can do that to one student, he can do it to any of us. So you've got to be very careful about that, because that you could just inadvertently, without trying, undermine that trust.
And I think when you think about teaching being such a depleting, ego-depleting job, you know, and just having to also monitor these kind of, you know, these kind of behaviors too. It's we have an important job. We have a hard job, important job though, that to impact a lot of people positively.
And you know, like, it's important, like, your third class of the day, you're exhausted, and you misspeak, and you know, it's a tough thing.
Oh my goodness. Well, I am thrilled with this article. I was so excited about it since the moment I read it, and so I've been looking forward to this conversation. I can't wait to see what you come up next, and I'm going to be looking forward to your next publications. But mainly, I just want to say thank you so much. I know you're busy, and I just really appreciate the time you took to speak with me today.
Always a pleasure, Liz.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.zula.edu.
That's cat.xu. ucla.edu.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.